I will talk about some issues that happen about representing and aligning knowledge organization systems on the semantic web, and especially from the linked data perspective, trying to present some stuff that has recently happened on that topic, and what are the issues that had popped up, and how they have been tackled or not. So first, a refresher on the linked data principles. So these were introduced by Tim Berners-Lee a while ago now, some years ago, and they are pretty simple, and they advocate a pretty simple way to publish data on the web. So the first thing that you should do is to use URIs as name for things. So we have seen a great deal of URIs in the presentation before, so I won't insist on that. The second principle is to use HTTP URI so that people can look up these names. So the idea is really to be able, from an identifier, to be able to go on the net and to find data for that identifier. And you should find this data according to some standard way to represent data and to access it, so namely RDF for representing data and Sparkle for querying it if you want to do some kind of SQL-like interrogation of your data. So that is the third principle. And the fourth principle is extremely important. So it states that there should be links to other URIs so that people can discover more links, more information about what they were searching for in the first place. And that is really crucial because it allows you to publish and to reuse data via the web in a very web fashion, if you want, because you can now have data sources which are not isolated anymore, but which are connected together, and you can go through these connections just in a very similar way as you would browse the web as a human. So this principle number four is really crucial to the vision. When you publish data using this linked data approach, you should try as much as possible to include links to other URIs, to other data sets that were published by other institutions or other individuals on the linked data cloud. And it gives you this kind of network structure. So for these among you, if they are who have not seen that yet, so this is called the linked data cloud, and this this is a number of data sets that has been that have been published according to these principles and which are connected together. So each bubble in the cloud represents one data set. So you've got, for example, I will go later. What about knowledge organization system in this vision? So my personal background is in this COS initiative, which was aimed at creating a vocabulary to represent knowledge organization systems, so all the CSORI, the classification schemes that we have discussed today. SCOS is meant as representing simple knowledge organization scheme data using the RDF language. And, using a pretty much toyish example, if we start from a thesaurus such as the one on the top left, which has a term for animals, which points to another term, cats, and then you have information about the term cats. You know that it's used for domestic cats. It's related to wild cats. It has a broader term, animals, so that's the symmetric relation to the one that was at the beginning. It has a scope note that clarifies the way you should use the term. The same for domestic cats and for wild cats, which, comes with not much information except than a term. And this can be represented in SCOS using this, the construct that that SCOS gives you for that. So you mint your eyes for the concepts which are behind the terms. So in our case, we've got animals, cats, and wild cats. You use the SCOS labeling properties to assign labels to these concepts. So for example, cat at the bottom left will have a preferred label which will represent the main terms to denote the concepts. That will be cats, and it will have an alternative label which represents the terms that cats was used for, namely domestic cats. and you can represent the scope note, and you have the semantic relations between the concepts that were intended behind the scissor. So you know that cats as animals as a broader concept, and cats is related to wild cats. And there is more to scope than that, because as we are semantic web oriented here, SCOS allows to bridge across knowledge organization systems from different contexts. So if I have a first vocabulary such as the one that we had on the previous slides with two concepts, namely cats and animals, so I can first represent the fact that they are in one vocabulary, and that I have got a second vocabulary which has just one concept called animal, and I can, using the SCOS construct, represent semantic links between these concepts. And this is the linking that allows you to cross through knowledge organization systems, just the way that has been brilliantly demonstrated in the previous talks, by the way. Just this allows you to, just to jump from one concept to the other quite seamlessly. There have been some recent efforts about trying to deploy these techniques in the fields that are related to the knowledge organization system paradigm. So, not a surprise, there are many libraries. So we've got linked data implementations from the Swedish National Libraries, the Library of Congress, the German Library, as has been presented today. The French Library has also published its subject headings as linked data. OCLC is doing it for DDC as a pilot, and for the virtual International Authority file as a more production system. We've got the STW Economy Thesaurus, which has been published by Joachim here in the room. We've got the National Library of Hungary. And we've got other fields which might be, still a bit library-minded, but not officially about library organizations. So the Wikipedia categories were published as linked data through what is called the DBpedia project, which is a massive dump of all the knowledge which is represented in Wikipedia, or all the structured knowledge in Wikipedia over linked data. And that includes all the categories which people are using to annotate the Wikipedia pages. You've got the New York Times newspaper, which has published its subject headings as linked data. You've got some other efforts in the astronomy domain, in the environmental domain, and also in the biology domain. So they have been pretty active at publishing their vocabularies as linked data and connecting them together. Because indeed, quite a lot of these implementations include links between themselves. And when someone publish a knowledge organization system, they try to really fit this linked data principle and to link to some other resources. We've got now the RCSH, SVD, and RAMO, which are interlinked through the MAX mappings, as has been mentioned. So it was something really important for the people who are publishing this knowledge organization system that they could actually reuse these manual links to connect the websites that they were putting together. They are connected together. The linked data at the German library is connected to both DBpedia and VIAF. Libris in Sweden has been linked to the Library of Congress subject heading. AgroVoc has been mapped to a number of other agricultural vocabularies. The New York Times linked to some other resources, which are DBpedia, Freebase, which is a kind of encyclopedia as well, GeoNames, which is a very important reference for place all around the world. And all around this cloud that I've shown in the previous slide, there are links to DBpedia as a general rule. So the Hungarian National Library, the STW Thesaurus, the taxon concepts, linked data sites, As mentioned, the German National Library, they are pointing to DBpedia as a kind of hub for connecting their concepts to this linked data cloud. And the question that I wanted to investigate a bit here is, well, whether these links are enough and whether they are of any good. So there have been many discussions in the linked data community recently about the usefulness of these links, and we'll see that, well, the situation is not so simple as it may seem in the first place. The first kind of issue is the sparseness of the link between the linked data data sets. So if you look at the cloud, it looks as if everything is neatly connected, and if you happen to have your data set and you put it in the cloud, it will just fit there, linked to everything, and feel very cozy there at home. But in fact, it's not really what it looks like when you investigate it closer. And I've got people in my lab who actually tested that network to some graph analysis tool, and this is the kind of network that you get behind the scheme, and that shows that in fact there are a very small amount of hubs to which all the other data sets are connected, and they are on the right. This is a set of data which has been published by the Southampton University, and it's mostly about scientific publications. So you've got, I don't know if you can see it, but on the left of the third cluster, you've got DBLP, which is this reference database for scientific publication, and this is really the hub of that cluster. On the middle, you've got DBpedia, and this cluster is more about general knowledge, and this is the one which actually concentrates everything which is not so much specialized, because the one which is on the left is actually a quite specialized biology cluster. So there you will have biology vocabularies, biology database, which are glued together and which are provided by just a couple of projects, in fact. And the problem that you may envision with that is that if one or two of these hubs fall down, then you lose the links that make your linked data cloud a real network. Or if the very few data sets which are behind the cluster are removed, then you will end up with three different clouds and not just one. So there are some issues that, well, in fact, these links may not be enough to guarantee a very stable environment and also ease of navigating from one data set to the other when they are about quite different subjects. There are also other more fundamental issues which someone in the community, Mike Urschel, called the semantic elephants of linked data. The first one is that URIs tend to proliferate. So when people publish their data sets, they just create URIs for their objects, and they see just after what will happen with that, if they will be able to connect them to other people URIs. And this issue of managing coreference has become maybe the number one issue in the linked data domain for the moment. So if everyone publishes identifiers for things, but these identifiers are not linked together when they are actually referring to the same thing, then you break a bit the vision, and you will obviously need more data to have the cloud function properly. The second one, which I won't elaborate in this talk, is about versioning, but that is actually pretty much connected to the previous presentation. So what happens when the description for one thing changes? How do you maintain the consistency in your network when you have different versions of the same concept or the same, well, whatever description that you have? And the third one is what is called the overloading of all semas in a pretty technical term, and I will come back to that in a couple of slides. Just a bit of explanation. So what are the kinds of links that you find up there? So the coreference links are the most used, and as I said, they are the most crucially needed. And to express a kind of similarity or coreference between resources on the link data, you've got actually a small amount of vocabularies at your disposal. And the very first link which is used is called all same as. So that's a link which has been created in the ontology web language vocabulary, so to express, to define classes, to define properties, but also to express identity between objects. The second and the third links come from the SCoS vocabulary, and they are meant to denote, well, a kind of vague notion of exact and approximate match. I will come to that later and express a bit actually why they are vague. And you also have other relations like RDFS-C also, which is, well, just a very generic association. So if you are searching for, well, information about a thing and you find a URI and there is a C also from that URI to another URI, it just means that you might be interested in exploring that other URI and you may find something or you might find nothing. Umbel is like, that is part of a vocabulary which is dedicated to, try to glue together the different concepts that you find on the link data cloud, and it has not been much used until now, but it's also a very generic kind of similarity link. But as I said, the first one is clearly the one which is the most used. And the problem is that pretty much everyone uses it in the right way. So actually, in the web ontology language, this property same as is defined with pretty precise formal semantics. And one very important bit of semantics which is associated to it is the fact that whenever you have two entities which are connected by all same as property, they should share every other property which is asserted to them. So if you've got a resource and you know that the name of that resource is Antoine Isaac, so that resource may stand for me. Then you have another resource, another URI, and you've got a same as link from that second URI to the first one. Then by means of the ontology web language semantics, you should be able to infer that your second resource also has the name Antoine Isaac attached to it. And that's, that looks like the kind of nice stuff that you want to have in a network environment when you want to solve coreferencing problems and to access every information which is attached to a same entity, whatever this information was asserted in the first place. The problem is that many same as statements are asserted between resources which are not exactly the same, but which are only very similar. So you can have a same resource but viewed in different contexts. So you actually merging the information would not be that easy. You can have reference links. So sometimes you've got a resource which represents a page and it is connected via same as to a resource which represents the very real-world entity that this page is about. That can very well happen. So you've got all kind of problems. And I will try to use the New York Times case as a kind of illustration for that. So the New York Times entered the link data cloud 1.5 years ago, maybe. And that was very interesting because they were one of the very first to really go into link data without, they almost went by themselves. So they were not pushed by any external pressure. It was just their idea that this could actually be very useful for them. And what they did is to publish part of their subject. So the New York Times maintained a list of subject, and they used that to describe their articles. And they published this subject as link data on this site above. So you've got 10,000 concepts, and these concepts were manually or automatically linked when it was manual, it was done by their own staff. To other link data resources, namely DBpedia, Freebase, and GeoNames. And that's very interesting for them because that allows to link their own articles to this linked data cloud, and that would allow us to easily mix the content that the New York Times produces with any other content which can be reached via this this cloud. So, for example, the Wikipedia information for a given subject. You've got also some videos which are annotated by concepts from the BBC, for example. So that seemed very very interesting to them, and they went into this linked data cloud. And well, actually, the very first day we kind of saw that there was some quite messy modeling. And for example, we had statements like these ones at the bottom. So the first one is actually about that's the URI of a concept, and they were asserting data for this concept. And one of the statements was that the New York Times company was the rights holder of the concept, which makes sense in a way. The problem is that this concept was also linked to a DBpedia concept using an all same as link. So if you actually apply the semantics of the all same as link fully, then that says that the New York Times company was claiming rights on the DBpedia concept, which was not really what they intended in the first place. So actually, this kind of problem comes from a first confusion about what is being aligned, and you may want to have clearer alignments between knowledge organization systems just by trying to sort out what is being aligned. So either concepts, documents, real-world entities out there, like persons and places. And in principle, this all same as link should not be applied across disjoint categories. So if you link a document to something which represents a person, you might end up with some unintended consequences. And actually, even inside one category, there can be issues. So if you have two different concepts, really concepts from a knowledge organization system, say DDC and SVD, and you match them using an all same as link, then all the management information which is attached to them, all their change notes through time will be merged, and you may end up with some DDC very specific management information which is applied to the SVD one, which is also not what what you may want in the first place. The second kind of problem is that you want to solve so as to have a clearer situation with respect to knowledge organization system alignments is to find out, to better represent all these concepts that you are aligning are aligned. So to distinguish between exact coreference, conceptual similarity, which includes semantic equivalence, and classification links. So this is a first step. And then you may want to make clearer distinctions between your conceptual links. So what we actually offered in SCoS, so there was the opportunity to represent hierarchical kind of alignment between concepts, or just associative alignment between concepts. So not just one very generic similarity association, which may give what you want or may not. Also, what is extremely important when you want to represent alignment information between concepts is to try to minimize the ontological commitment for the people who are consuming your data. And that's what this dichotomy between exact match and close match in the SCoS vocabulary tries to achieve. So I think it was Jessica who actually presented these definitions in her slides. So the idea between SCoS exact match is that it is used to relate concepts which can be used interchangeably across a wide range of applications. So whenever you are using one concept, if it is related via an exact match link to another concept, you may use the other concept in the exact position of the first one. And this is transitive, so it will propagate across several concept schemes if you have appropriate exact match. So if you have A exact match B exact match C, then you will infer that A is related using an exact match relation to C. And this is a pretty strong assumption. And when we designed the SCoS vocabulary, we wanted to offer data publishers and data consumers, well, to have something which would have a bit less semantic commitment. And that's what Close Match is about. Close Match is actually meant, well, to denote a kind of more, well, a relation which holds in a smaller set of application, a relation which has a smaller scope. So if you have a close match between two concepts and one of these concepts is related to a third one, also via a close match, you won't have a close match between the first and the third. So it really keeps the equivalence link in the bounds of one specific case with two concept schemes. So it is not transitive. And the idea was really to try to avoid people to actually use data which would not comply strong ontological commitment. So coming back to this New York Times case study. So actually pretty soon after they published their first version, they published a second one with a considerable improvement in data quality. So now what they do is they make the distinction between the concepts and the documents, the data set which describe these concepts. So you now have the factual information which is attached to the concept itself and all the management data which is attached to the resource that represents the data source, so the context for the concepts. So this is the first four lines of the examples here. So you've got the same identifiers as previously, which is of type concept, and it has the conceptual information that, well, it has a label which is Parks Hope in New York City. You've got latitude, and you've got this all same as link to DBpedia. And then for the rights, instead of attaching them to the concept, they've attached them to another URI, which stands for the RDF document which describes the concept. And there they say that they hold the right for the document, which is perfectly valid from a theoretical perspective. And they connect the document to the concept using this primary topic link. So that's already much better. Still, for resources which are linked with all same as statements, you may still have problems when you merge these different resources. So, for example, the DBpedia resource is not declared as a scarce concept when you look up the DBpedia data. So that might actually be a problem because by the same as link, you're inferring that the DBpedia resource is a concept. Yeah. Or the two resources might have different information with respect to the latitude, for example. They might have different precision. One may be more recent than another. That's especially valid for the cities. I think that they have different update rhythms, so you might have a city with two different populations. Coming back to this effort of clarifying the alignment situation, a third category of question which is very important to try to answer is what is the alignment for? So as we've seen, the scarce mapping properties, they use the notion of validity within one application concept, so some of them. So close match is just valid between two concept schemes which are meant to be used in specific applications, and you should be very careful when you reuse that in another application. And in fact, this application context for mapping has been investigated in Cesaurus interoperability studies for quite a while now. I believe that Dagobert or Stella might say some more words on that tomorrow. But the fact is that the application of the alignments matter a lot. So I was involved in a project previously which was called Stitch, and we came with some application scenarios for cultural heritage, so more precisely for the Dutch National Library, which hosted us. And you can use alignments for different things. It can be reindexing books, so changing the description of one book from one concept scheme to another. You can merge different thesauri. You can do query formulation a bit, as we've seen before. And the very same alignment can perform quite differently for different scenarios. So we've done some experiments. Well, actually, this was the first one we've done. Several more recent, but well, this is quite telling. We actually took the results of three different matching tools for the two same vocabularies at the National Library of the Netherlands. And we evaluated them for two different scenarios. So on the left, you've got the result for Thesaurus merging, and for the right, you've got the results for book reindexing. So this is let's focus on the left side every time. So we have what we call the precision, which is roughly the quality that you obtain when you apply the mapping. So whether you had a good result or a wrong one. And in the case of Thesaurus merging, the performances of the mapping tools were really different from the one that we obtained if we use the same alignments for another scenario. And this actually can be explained when you look at the specificity of the scenario. So we had these two thesauri at the National Library of the Netherlands called GTT and Brinkman. And it was funny to observe that for Thesaurus merging, we had one leak which was pretty good. So excavation in one thesaurus, the GTT one, and excavation in the Brinkman thesaurus. And it was pretty obvious that if you want to merge the two thesauri, well, you just create a link between them and that's it. The problem is that for book reindexing, this relation was not so much interesting. The really interesting relation was the one between GTT excavation and Brinkman archaeology in Netherlands. Because every book which had been indexed by excavation using the GTT thesaurus had been indexed using archaeology in the Netherlands with the Brinkman thesaurus. So that's a typical case of discrepancy between indexing strategies. And for these applications, if you really want to transform one indexing from one vocabulary to the other, it's more interesting to have the second link than the first one, because if you have the first one, you would get no good results. So somehow representing alignment information for use in this kind of semantic web application requires a finer representation grain for the context in which the alignment are produced. So who created them? Were they manual or automatic alignment? What kind of strategy has been used? Is there a degree of confidence? So stuff that you should elaborate. So coming back to the New York Times, they also came back to that. And they try to make their mapping strategy explicit. So they say whether it was manual or automatic. So that's the thing at the top. But the problem is that they did not know really to which resource attach this information. And they put that in the document. But actually, it does not apply to the link itself. And the problem is that the alignment, when they use simple binary properties like Cossack-Jackmatt without anything else, they do not allow for much flexibility. And there is an ontology matching community which has investigated that and which came to a consensus that richer alignment metadata was needed, and which came with some more complex representation means. So this is the simple scarce alignments. And actually, if you really want to have a really flexible and rich representation, you should reify your links in a way which looks a bit like that. So you represent the alignment as such, you represent the link as such, and you can annotate the link in the alignment. So you can say that the alignment is a manual mapping between two vocabularies, that your specific link between two concepts, which is called the cell here, as a confidence measure, so in that case one, and so on and so on. And you can represent this provenance information that you were missing. So the problem is that the link data vision cannot very easily accommodate some complex representation. So the strength of the link data approach comes from the fact that you have standard linking. You want me to finish. And the problem is to have this simple linking which allows for serendipity coexist with some more sophisticated approach, which puts higher barrier for data publication and consumption. And I will skip all the things. So roughly, what should be obtained is some coexistence between the two visions. So you should be able to exploit simple links if this is your interest, and if you want to go for more precise information, you should go for it. Well, you should be offered the information for doing that. So it's technically feasible, but the problem is that we still have to identify some practices to do it. So the conclusion. So almost any alignment is better than none. So this is a web of data. So you really have to, if you don't have the link, then you don't have any value in your network. The good thing is that there is already great stuff happening and stuff that is being done in this community, for example. And certainly more involvement from the community here could help, producing alignment in the first place, but also thinking about the theoretical foundations. Thank you, I'm sorry for the...
Thank you very much. Many things to think and talk about, I think. Are there questions? No questions? But one moment, please. The microphone is coming up to you.
If there are no questions, it means we have some time, and we could hear what Antoine was going to say. Wouldn't that be nice? Because he was made to hurry over the last bit, which was just getting really interesting. Sorry, but that's my point.
Kannst du es gleich weitergeben an Frau Wiesenmüller?
Ja. Let's look at the slide.
Also. Okay. Other questions or remarks? Okay, if that's not the case, we will finish the session. We thank you for the interest.
What?
Ach, ich dachte in private, haben Sie gesagt. Ja, das kommt hier nicht so an. Also ich höre das nicht so wirklich. Okay, ja.
So I don't know how to interpret that, yeah.
No, it was an acoustic problem.
Okay, so I was talking about this ideal coexistence between simpler data as advocated by the linked data approach or just following the links, and some more precise what more precise applications may need, and my hypothesis was that applications with narrow scope requiring precise data could just afford selecting alignments that they consume, exploit and produce finer grained alignment as the one that we demonstrated, and on the other side, simple data may be useful for a wide range of applications which have simpler needs. And which exploit a wide range of data sets for which getting access to complex data may actually put a higher barrier to implementation. So when you think about all the simple mesh-up applications, which are kind of robust to limited approximation, and all kind of web-scale applications like all the large-scale document retrieval things. So if you miss some information or if you've got some garbage which comes for 10% of your results, then if you have 90% which is useful and which you found very easily, that can bring huge value for your scenario. Also, concept discovery, so you browse across a conceptual space, and you can afford just getting links which are not so much precise, as long as they make some kind of sense. So in a way, what I wanted to ask is whether this linked data did need to be perfect anyway. So if we really want to throw away all the crucial coreference information which is already out there, so there is this site called sameas.org, and it gathers information about 35 million of identifiers, which it bundles into 11 million. So it solves already a great part of the potential problems you may have. With linked data. Already you have less to explore, and you know that much of this coreference linkage has been done. Also, the extensive linking to DBpedia proves to be very useful, even when the type of link, so in that case all same as, is not used in the theoretically good way. So we've got interesting applications, for example, from the BBC, they have these sites where they link their content to the Wikipedia one, and this is done using these links, which are not theoretically correct, just because there is a kind of pragmatic interpretation of the link. And in fact, there are to be a bit more serious, the issues which with this this mixed quality of linkage are also being investigated and start to be tackled in the community. So, for example, all these million URIs and the bundles between them, they are explicitly provided as a service to provide you with help finding URIs, and not something which will give you an exactly equivalent concept or resource. And it keeps track of the data sources, and it can ship that information to you if you're interested. So you can still sort out the mess from the good stuff. And there is also very very active investigation efforts with respect to representing and exchanging provenance information. So which data sets contain which statements in the first place, which of course helps you to sort out this this problem of mixed quality. So yeah, and that, that was the final slide about this coexistence between different approach. Really the advice that I would make is that if you have a complex representation, and I'm really thinking about all this nice stuff that we've seen about crisscross and max with rich information actually, it's very valid to have this valid information published as linked data, but it's also very interesting to think about these people, this and this application, which, well, do care a bit less about it and just want simple simple links. So it would be very interesting to articulate these richer formats, these richer representation with which are stored in complex alignment repositories with more simple links, which simple application can consume straight away. So it's technically feasible, as I said, but there are still some best practices to be identified.